with Lynn Washington Jr. on the misconduct of Ferguson prosecutor Robert McCulloch and an interview with Phyllis Bennis on the growing power of Islamic State in the Middle East. At 11 on stage and studio, guest host is Sarika Mehta. She features three dancers from the Oregon Ballet Theater who will be performing the Nutcracker this month. And then stay tuned at 11:30, metal artist Greg Wilbur, mixed media artist Keeney Rathbun, and multimedia artist Lisa Kaser talk about the art of the alphabet at the Waterstone Gallery. And be a part of Giving Tuesday today. This is a day that inspires personal philanthropy and encourages bigger, better, and smarter charitable giving during the holiday season. KBOO is excited to participate. We have a $5,000 match for new members, and for current members that give more than they did last year for the month of December, go to kboo.fm/give to make your donation now. And we will be going now to Flashpoints on KBOO Portland.
Today on Flashpoints, the prosecutor in the Brown case has a record of wrongful convictions against people of color. We'll investigate. And the U.S. is losing to ISIS as the self-proclaimed Islamic State grows in power all over the Middle East. I'm Dennis Bernstein. All this straight ahead on Flashpoints. Stay tuned. In Berkeley, California, I'm Dennis Bernstein, listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. Well, does the name Robert P. McCulloch sound familiar to you? Well, if you're paying any attention to the recent decision by the grand jury not to prosecute in the murder of Michael Brown, you will know that he was the prosecutor who, in an amazing sort of unusual presentation, not only sort of manipulated the grand jury into a not indicting the officer, in fact, allowed the officer to come and testify before the grand jury. Joining us to talk about his history and what might help us understand his actions is Lynn Washington. Lynn Washington is a founding member of a news site that I love, This Can't Be Happening, and he is a professor of journalism at Temple University in Philadelphia. Lynn Washington, it's good to have you back on Flashpoints.
Thanks for having me, Dennis.
Well, first of all, before we get into the history here, let me get your response to the way in which the prosecutor went about using the grand jury to make sure that there was no indictment. Talk about that.
Well, I think your assessment or your characterization of the prosecutor McCulloch using the grand jury is very accurate. McCulloch had a duty as the prosecutor to make a decision. If he felt that there were not enough circumstances to warrant charges against this guy, Wilson, then he should have taken the action. Instead, he ducked and dodged, and he utilized the grand jury. Now, that is within the purview of prosecutors, but what happened here was a gross perversion of proper and accepted grand jury procedure. And that's one of the more telling aspects here, that this guy McCulloch just misused the grand jury in an effort to provide him the cover for doing what he wanted to do anyway, which was not hold this police officer accountable. We're not saying that the police officer should be adjudged guilty, but there should have been a trial, at least, where evidence for the defense and evidence for the prosecution could have been presented fairly and subject to cross-examination.
Were you surprised?
Absolutely, I was not surprised. When McCulloch refused to recuse himself, when he refused to appoint a special prosecutor, when the governor of the state of Missouri refused to take it out of the hands of the county prosecutor, who, due to past practices, had not been seen as someone who was fair. I knew that, you know, it would just be a matter of time before Wilson was, the charges would just disappear against him. So, no, it's a long answer to your short question. No, I wasn't surprised.
All right, well, we want to get into some background on Mr. McCullough. You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. We're speaking with Professor Lynn Washington, who has a piece that came out in Counterpunch today. It's up on the web, and it's about the history. Now, you point out that McCullough declared piously that eyewitness accounts must always match physical evidence. But you point out in his own recent history that hasn't been the case, and it didn't seem to matter to him.
No, it didn't. When the article that I did examines how McCullough handled the Wilson case versus a series of other cases where persons were wrongfully convicted, and they were later released by DNA evidence, evidence that once it came out, the prosecutor there, McCullough, his office continued to fight against these people. So this person does not have a good track record in terms of seeing that justice is done.
Well, you talk about the case of Antonio Beaver and lay that out for us.
Well, Antonio Beaver was one of these cases that I was talking about in terms of a wrongful conviction. It just so happens in the run-up to the press conference, which was quite unusual that they would make this announcement late at night. I think McCullough was hoping that there would be some violent reaction so he could say, see, these people are crazy, and you know, just we help the guy who was protect and serve as Wilson. But before the press conference, you know, when it was supposed to happen at 7, so it didn't happen until around 9. So during that time, I said, let me go online and let me look at wrongful convictions, because I'm sure that there has to be some there. And did I find a gold mine? I mean, it's kind of horrible when I say a gold mine, because, you know, with journalists, good stories for us are something that's tragic happening to somebody. And with the Antonio Beavers, this was a guy who was wrongfully convicted for a rape that actually was a carjacking that took place in 1996. Now, the victim of the carjacking said that the assailant described the person, and that description did not match Beavers in any way. The victim said that her assailant was younger than Beavers, was shorter than Beavers, weighed less than Beavers, and tellingly, she also said that during the carjacking, there was a struggle, and the attacker sustained a injury on his arm, a bloody injury. Now, when they arrested Beaver a week later, then the eyewitness account from the victim matched him. He had no injury on his arm, and like I said, you know, the height, weight, all that didn't match. And then by that point, the forensics had come back, and there were no fingerprints in the car from this guy. So if, in fact, McCullough was honest, which he's not, saying that the eyewitness accounts always match the physical evidence, then this guy Beavers should never have been sentenced. I think he got sentenced to 18 years in prison. He ended up serving about 10. He was able, through the help of a jailhouse lawyer, to get back in court. Then the Innocence Project took it over, found the DNA evidence, had it tested, and the guy was eventually released after 10 years in jail.
10 years in jail.
Yes,
based on this faulty and could be illegal prosecution. Now, and the Innocence Project had him released. They picked up the story. They picked up the case. They had him released. Did Beaver speak out after this?
He spoke out. Well, let me put it this way. I don't know if he spoke out what I was able to find online, and that's different from what he may have said to other people or things that he said regionally in the St. Louis area. But he was just glad to get out, and, you know, I don't hold any grudge. I want to put my life back together, and you know, those sort of accounts. You wonder how these folks are so magnanimous when so much time is just stolen, robbed from their lives. Now, I've created a laid out a scenario where the police did not follow the evidence that the eyewitness said. And in some of these instances, the blame kind of shifts on the eyewitness, where they made a wrong thing, and it was cross-racial, so the victim may have been a little bit racist. But the reality is this. The police are supposed to fully investigate all of a crime. And that means look at things that are incriminating, which is legally called inculpatory, and also looking at exculpatory, things that prove innocence. They didn't do that, and they didn't do it well in this case. But in the justice system, there's supposed to be yet another layer of examination, and that's the layer done by prosecutors. Prosecutors, before they move forward with a case from a police officer or detective, they're supposed to do an independent examination of the evidence. And in this case, they just passed it on through. So the prosecutors that handled that case did not perform their legal and their ethical duties in terms of looking at this case and seeing that there were very glaring problems there.
All right. And can you step back? How does this fit into the overall record of McCullough, things that happened under his watch or things that he responded to in this context?
Well, from what I've been able to find from just the Innocence Project, and these are people who were exonerated due to DNA evidence, there's been 6 or 8 in St. Louis County, and the majority of those are coming from St. Louis. McCullough is the prosecutor for St. Louis County, which includes the city of St. Louis, and it also includes the city of Ferguson. Now, those are just exonerations based on DNA that the Innocence Project had some involvement with. There are other people who have been released from wrongful convictions that have been overturned for different other reasons. But I think relevant to the Darren Wilson case, at the beginning of this century, oh my goodness, we're going into 2015, but I think it was in 2000, 2001, there was a shooting where a police officer and a DEA agent shot 2 unarmed men. They claimed that the men drove a car towards them, they feared for their lives, and they shot them dead. McCullough sent that to a grand jury rather than saying very clearly, based on eyewitness accounts, that what these men did were wrong. The car did not go towards them. They were not in fear of their lives. They just murdered these guys. When McCullough had his press conference on that instance, he said that all of the witnesses who testified, and they were all police witnesses, said that these men threatened the lives of the officers who subsequently shot them dead. Well, McCullough turned over the transcripts to a reporter. The reporter went through it and found that McCullough lied. Only 3 of the 13 witnesses had actually confirmed what the police officer said, so now we have 10 police witnesses saying something different. Yet he freed those people. When I say those people, I mean the 2 officers that were involved in this wrongful shooting. And even worse, the feds came in, looked at it, found fault, found that the 2 officers were lying, but said that it may have been justified because they feared for their lives. So the protections that we claim that we have in this country are too often the exception and not the rule. And that is what's causing these reactions to this particular circumstance in Ferguson all across the country, because the government, be it at the local level, the state level, or the federal level, is lying and is not following the law.
Now back to the Antonio Beaver case, who was eventually exonerated thanks to the incredible work of the Innocence Project. And the prosecutor here, McCullough, opposed his request for DNA. The prosecutor tried actively to stop him from dealing with the situation through DNA, right?
Absolutely. The state of Missouri, from my understanding of my readings, had passed a law that said that if there was a conviction that was questionable and there's evidence that could be tested for DNA, then the defendant, the inmate at that point, has a right for that to happen. But they layer these things in where a prosecutor can oppose it. A prosecutor's job, in terms of the ethics that apply in every state, is worded a little bit different from state to state, but it basically says this. A prosecutor's job is justice, not just to convict. However, prosecutors turn that on their head and they feel that their job is to convict. And I wrote about this a couple of weeks ago in terms of a really horrific situation that befell a teenager in Philadelphia when he was arrested and was about to be put in jail for 80 years for something that never happened. But in these cases, what I laid out was this, that a prosecutor does not get promotions or advancement or raises or anything else based on exonerating people and making sure that justice is done. They get promoted based on convictions. So for them, it's just a job. Policeman gives me a file. He says the guy's guilty. That's all I need to know about it. And I'm going to do what I can to win the case for me, even if it, you know, and it doesn't even come into their minds that a person is innocent and you are doing something wrong. That never comes into it. And that's one of the tragedies of our criminal justice system. And it's not a secret. Everybody knows it. But they said if we start dealing with these issues, and this is what came up in one of these U.S. Supreme Court decisions about 20 years ago, if we start really trying to correct the system and make it work, the system will fall apart. So we'll continue on with a broken system and continue to put people in jail wrongfully every year, year after year after year after year. That's why we have 2 million people in prison. Yeah, some of the people should be there, but at least 10%. They can see that 10% of the people who are in prison are there wrongfully. So if we have 2 million people in prison, that's 200,000 people in living hell. And because the system won't say it's sorry.
You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. Speaking of, and that's Lynn Washington. He teaches journalism at Temple University. He is a founding member of This Can't Be Happening, a wonderful independent investigative website, a wonderful journalist. Now, he didn't apologize, did he?